Before we dive right into the show, I have something to say. I'm back! I woke up yesterday on December 12th after 24 days of being completely locked out of Facebook and Instagram because a photo of a plus-size mother exercising with her daughter was mass reported as being inappropriate, and there was nothing inappropriate about it. But it took 24 days for a human to review the photo and be like, oh yeah, there's nothing wrong with this, and removed all of my restrictions. So I'm back on Facebook and Instagram at Plus Mommy and Plus Size Birth, and I am so, so thankful after this long, painful saga I've been through, and thank you for everyone for your love and support. So the show must go on, right? Let's get back to the show. Here we go. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Today, I'm joined by a sweet Southern mama with a little bit of a spicy tongue, so we've got some language. But I also want to share that she talks openly and rawly about existing in a larger body and what that can feel like during motherhood. She mentions her weight and she mentions some internal struggles around her size. I think everything that she shares are things that so many of us can identify with. And that piece is not a huge portion at all about this episode, but I know sometimes hearing those expressions of feelings can be triggering. And if it is for you, then maybe this isn't the right episode. She also shares some incredible gems while walking through the differences in her three pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experiences. And I just absolutely adore her and think you'll love this episode. But as always, whenever I feel like there might be a bit of a trigger, I like to provide a trigger warning. So if you're ready, here we go. Hi, friends. Today we are joined by Cammy, also known as Big Mama Cammy on TikTok and Instagram. She is an incredible force, a mother of three, someone who I adore and have been in community with for so many years. And I'm just so excited to connect with you and have you on the show. Welcome, Cammy.
Hey. Hey, everybody. Hey guys.
Where are you joining us from? Because I love your accent.
East Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Born and raised here. Dolly Parton and I are from the same hometown, actually.
Okay, that's really cool. That is a really good fun fact.
She went to my high school, actually.
Oh my gosh.
I had a teacher who also taught her. He's retired. He actually passed away a couple years ago. But yeah.
Do they have like plaques or anything about
Dolly? Oh, yeah. And this is like, we could do a whole podcast on but she has done so much for Sevier County. She actually helped. There was a high dropout rate in our high school.
Oh, wow.
And she actually like did this program and like dramatically increased the dropout rate or increased the graduation rate. She would come to graduation for several years and hand out $500 to you if you graduated.
Wow.
She would come to the graduation and do it herself. I mean, that's just like a tiny little dip into the philanthropy of Dolly Parton. But yeah. But they have all kinds of little things to honor her and stuff.
That is so cool. I've always been a Dolly fan, but now even more hardcore.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like it's like the more you learn about her, the more you love her. Like, you know.
Yes. Well, yeah. You are joining us because it's a passion of yours. And we were just talking before recording, especially you growing your presence so rapidly on TikTok, that you're not seeing a lot of representation around plus size pregnancy and birth. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that feels like as a plus size mom?
Yeah. And I will say, just from when I was first pregnant in 2016 to now in 2022, I do feel like there's more of a presence out there and I'm seeing more about it. Sorry, there's a plane. We live real close to an airport.
So you're fine.
And
there will likely be kids in the background too. We're moms. Yes. We get it.
Yeah. I feel like there is still more, but I still feel like honestly, it's not enough.
Yeah.
Because especially back then, I wanted to, whenever you're plus sized, whenever you're a person of size, you get this feeling from early on that everything you're doing, you kind of get othered, you know? And so you feel like whatever you're going to do that normal people do, you need extra, it's going to be more complicated for you somehow. I mean, first of all, I've never had any trouble getting pregnant. I mean, knock on wood. I know a lot of people do, but like, I really thought, I do have PCOS and some other things. So I just really thought that I was going to have trouble getting pregnant, but I have never had trouble getting pregnant.
Yeah.
So, you know, for one, just, you know, I spent years thinking that maybe I was infertile, but that's a whole other thing. But Jen, like, you were the only person I found in 2016 when I was pregnant, and because I wanted to try to have a natural birth. I wanted to try to do like no epidural, maybe even a birth center, something like that. And there was like nothing. There was almost no stories. Like a lot of the plus size people I knew either had epidurals or ended up with C-sections, which is fine.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to, like, your baby comes however it needs to come, and that's great. You know, and I did hypnobirthing, and that's great for you to, like, it helps you cope and accept things that can change, because even the best laid plans go awry. So, yeah, like, and I haven't, again, with my TikTok, like, I still haven't really done a whole lot to be able to work the fact in that I really want to advocate for fellow plus size people, fat people, whatever the word is that you want to use in birthing situations, because I love birth and I love to talk about birth. Yeah, I just kind of want to share more about my own birth stories and advocate for other people, because even in less ideal circumstances, you can still have a birth that you feel like was, you know, your options were supported, or you were respected, or you were able to kind of get what you wanted out of the experience, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes so much sense. And by hearing stories, we help to normalize it, because we are all normal, right?
Like, yeah,
we're
absolutely.
All, we're all parents.
Yeah, and in a way, almost just a sitting on the washing machine and, you know. So.
Yes, absolutely. It's just a setting. We're all normal and unique and diverse, and we should all be represented and feel included. And I'm so honored because you are included on the Plus Size Birth website and have been
forever.
With your stories and gorgeous. I remember your whimsical maternity photo
shoot. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think that was the first time we connected, was I shared my maternity photos in the group. And you were like, oh, please send these to me. And I still think if you Google plus size maternity photos, that those pictures still come up. They were so good.
Oh,
we have
so
stuff
good.
Framed in our house, of course. Oh my goodness. Like,
yes.
Wow.
I often shared yours as like an example of take photos. So I'll put
I'll
put them in the show notes so people can see over on plusmama.com.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about, so you said that you have PCOS, so that's polycystic ovarian syndrome. And we've talked about it a lot on the show that it can make it difficult to conceive. So for a long time you thought maybe it might be difficult, but then once you started trying, or was it a surprise pregnancy with your first Sagan?
I met Nathan and I was 29. I was almost 30 and he was in his early 30s, and we both kind of had similar life goals and similar things like that. And I felt to me like the clock was ticking on me. I really wanted to have a family. And so I thought, you know, we'll have to get started soon because I'm probably going to need fertility treatments and this and that. And so I had actually like my yearly OBGYN appointment or whatever a couple of months after we met. And I was like, hey, I think, you know, in a few months, I want to try to start getting pregnant. And so they were like, well, let's check and see, because my periods were super irregular and they always have been. And they're like, well, let's just do like an ultrasound and check and see. And I could see when they did the ultrasound, there were like so many cysts on my ovaries, like so many. I could even tell. And I'm not like an ultrasound tech person at all. And so they told me that, and she was like, well, why don't you just try? And in a few months, we'll, you know, give you some medicine or something if we need to. And so I was pretty, I came out of that feeling sad and feeling like it wasn't going to happen naturally. And so I just I had already stopped taking birth control, but we were trying to be, you know, we were using other methods. And I just came home and I was like, you know, I don't think it doesn't matter, you know. And I did start taking metformin 3 times a day. I've been taking it for a while, I think twice a day. I did start taking it 3 times a day, but like I was pregnant like 2 weeks later.
So
one of my friends was like, they told you you couldn't get pregnant and then you just went right home and proved them wrong, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because I kind of like to do things like that, I guess. But,
I love it.
So yeah, and I have not had any trouble since. So I wouldn't necessarily call him planned, but he was wanted, but we just did not expect it to happen that soon. We were getting ready to buy a house and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to do any kind of birth control anymore. And we'll get moved into this new house. And, you know, and at the beginning of the year, we'll start looking at fertility treatments or something. My middle child, IBGN, was probably the only one that was really planned, you know, so much. Like we were really truly trying on purpose, you know, because Sagan was about 14 or 15 months old. And I was like, we wanted to have one more. And so we just started trying. And like the next month I was pregnant, you know, wow. And even then, like I started to panic. I was like, oh, I'm probably going to have secondary infertility. I just know it. Because I have a close loved one who has struggled with secondary infertility, you know, and again, like you hear these stories and they're just so, it's just so common that you feel like it could happen to you too.
Yeah.
So I had no trouble getting pregnant with her. And then my last baby, we were not trying to, in fact, we were doing some things to try to prevent it and it happened anyway. So I tell everybody, like, don't underestimate your fertility. Like, you know, I mean, And that's not to discount. I know that a lot of people really, really struggle with
right.
So I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
No, you're not at all. No, we know what you're saying.
You know, I think, you know, when you're fat, people, there's so much. I mean, I think there's a lot there are things combating that now, but you just get the impression that you're going to have trouble getting pregnant or carrying a pregnancy or whatever. And I'm just here to tell you that that's not necessarily true.
Yes, I love that. And then also you kind of started in your 30s. So how old were you when you had your youngest?
I was 34 and I turned 35 a few months later. I had her in May and turned 35 in October.
Yeah. So like we say, like, oh, once you're 35, it's so hard. And you were 34 and your body just loves being pregnant and gets pregnant very easily. What were your pregnancies like as a plus size mom? Let's start with Sagan, the first one. Like, what did it feel like to exist in a larger body? And I know you were tall, too. So finding maternity clothes, what was that like?
Yeah, that first pregnancy, like, that was the sweetest time in my life. Like, aww. I still look back on it and just, I get chills just talking about how, thinking about how sweet it was. I was working as a therapist at the time. My coworkers were so supportive and, like, they were super helpful. And if I had a stressful day with a client, like, they'd be like, you know, you can take off a little early. We'll cover your case, you know, or what caseload or whatever, you know, like, I had such a great support network. Aww. And what a sweet time it was. I did buy some plus size pants. I don't know what I would do now because like there was a couple of motherhood maternity stores around here that did sell plus sizes, but they're like closed now. There's no brick and mortar stores. And like, I mean, your options are a little more limited as a plus size person looking for maternity clothing.
Yeah.
And for all three pregnancies, there were still things that I could wear from my regular wardrobe that still fit. And I will say this too, this was actually almost stitched a TikTok with another mother who was freshly postpartum. She's in a smaller body, but and she was being pretty positive. She wasn't really doing a lot of, I didn't think, unhealthy body check-in or anything like that, but she was just talking about her postpartum body and returning back to normal and all that stuff. Like, because I am a bigger person in a bigger body, my body, the way it changes in pregnancy is very different than I feel like somebody who is smaller. But I've never felt the pressure to bounce back after being pregnant because I've always kind of had a belly. Now my belly has changed. It has gotten bigger and all that stuff with each pregnancy. But I've always loved my postpartum body, like immediately after I've had my children.
No, tell us what you love about your postpartum body. I'd love to hear more.
I just think it's so amazing that I grew these little people, you know, like how could I be upset about that? I will say with Sagan, because Sagan's story is a little different, you know, because after he was born, we had no idea until after he was born, had a very major heart defect and had open heart surgery at 3 weeks old. So with him, there was the only sadness that I felt was the first night he was in the NICU. I got up the next morning and I looked at my belly and it was empty and kind of, you know, deflated. And I was like, it just feels so empty. And I was really sad. I mean, like, crying, so sad. And that's the only sadness that I've ever really felt about it is like, you know, like my baby's not with me all the time anymore. It's not, they're not growing in there anymore.
I love that though, that.
Yeah.
Because we hear so much negativity around body image, especially postpartum, and reframing it as like just the beauty and the thankfulness and how amazing it is. And then even like the bittersweet feelings of, you know, my baby's no longer there, but I love what my belly and body did to grow my baby.
And I think that it kind of goes back to like not taking it for granted because you know, I've spent so long wanting to be a mother and not knowing that it was going to happen. And it's like, how could I be so ungrateful to my body after giving me, you know, these things that, like, I love more than anything I've ever loved before, you know? So that's kind of how I feel about it. And that's not to say I don't struggle with body image in general. But when I think about how birth has changed my body, I don't tend to view that too negatively.
That's wonderful. What about your body image surrounding all your pregnancies?
I mean, your belly is different. And I love that you write about that on your website. You know, I had kind of the big belly and the apron belly. So I did at times wear things to kind of accentuate my belly so that I'm so tall and stuff too, that it wasn't always so evident that I was pregnant. Although I have looked back on some pictures recently and been like, yeah, you can tell I'm pregnant there. But at the time, you don't really feel like you really look at like somebody who in a smaller body might.
Yeah. Tell us what a B-belly is for those who don't know.
Yeah. So a B-belly, so like, how do I say it? It's like the westernized idea of beauty that we've all been socialized to believe is that women, all women have these beautiful flat stomachs and they kind of maybe even go in a little or something. So when you have a B-belly, your belly kind of that, like maybe the part of your belly over your belly button kind of hangs out over like the lower part, your lower abdomen. So it kind of makes like a literal B shape instead of like that, you know. So when you're pregnant, instead of having like that D shape, it looks more like a B.
Yeah.
Like a capital B.
Yes. And mine looks like a capital B started during pregnancy and still to this day.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mine was a capital B before pregnancy. And it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're right. I guess before pregnancy a bit too, but I viewed it more as a muffin top. And not a B-belly. Yeah. And then the language B-belly, I actually wrote that article, What's a B-belly? And it was one of the first articles around it because so many people, when I'd be like, what does no one talk about around plus-size pregnancy? They're like, belly shapes, like having a belly that looks like a B. And I'm like, oh, B-belly. And now it's like the B-belly hashtag has been used like tens of thousands of times on TikTok. Like, it's so cool how people are like embracing it. Because like you said, like, buddies do not come in the one shape that we're told that they're supposed to.
So
I love it. So you would sometimes wear clothing to help embrace and show that you looked pregnant. I did that as well too, because it took a while for me to like start showing as you know, traditionally as well.
I mean, I had my hands on my belly all the time too though, because you know, it's just so fun knowing your baby's in there. You know, so I would also be like touching my belly a lot too. So, you know.
How were you treated by the medical community during your pregnancies?
Not terrible, I would say, honestly. I mean, there were little things here and there. Especially there was one time during my last pregnancy that like does stick with me as being like, that was really not okay. But I don't make a big deal about it. I'll actually tell you about it right now. I've never really even talked about it before to anybody, actually. My last pregnancy, I will say I struggled a lot more than my other two pregnancies. It was not planned. And so, you know, my first son has these physical disabilities. My middle daughter actually has some developmental delays. We haven't had her diagnosed, but she could have autism. We don't know that for sure. So we were just finding that out, and I found out I was pregnant again.
Yeah.
And it was very stressful. And I wasn't sure how my other two children were going to adjust and how are we going to adjust. So I had that out on top of me already, plus the kind of trauma that came from having Sagan and having a baby being unexpectedly very ill.
Yeah.
So I had that to deal with. And then I also got gestational diabetes for the first time with that baby. And so I was just so stressed. I had horrible morning sickness the whole time, which I had really not had before. And actually, I lost weight with my second pregnancy too, but this pregnancy, I lost a ton of weight.
Were you just not able to hold food down?
I was really nauseous. And I also think that it was, I would vomit a lot and I had a lot of food aversions. And I think I was just so anxious too that it made me not want to eat.
Did they say anything to you about hyperemesis?
I did get Zofran. No, they never said that I had a hyperemesis, but they did give me Zofran and Phenagrin.
Okay.
And like, hey, but oh, my son heard me from the window and he said, hey, Mom, he'll come in here in a minute and he's going to say hi because that's who he is.
That's awesome.
So.
Hi.
Hi, Sagan.
this is Jen.
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Hi.
But anyway, I look back on like our family memories from like fall that year. And I think like, I could not have done that without Zofran or without nausea medicine. And so then whenever it became obvious that it wasn't severe gestational diabetes, but my fasting number was not really high, but it was borderline too high, and they were really watching that. So they tried me on metformin first, and I had not, at this point in life, I had not taken it in a long time.
Yeah.
And just trying to get back on it again when I was already so nauseous, there were mornings where I would just immediately wake up and throw up. And sometimes in the middle of the night, I would have to get up and throw up. And it was bad. And so I had seen midwives. I switched to the midwives when I was pregnant with Sagan and had a great delivery with them, had a great delivery with my daughter. So because it became clear that I was going to need insulin to get that fasting number down, I had to switch to the OBs in that practice, which was pretty devastating for me. I was 33 or 34 weeks pregnant when I found this out. And it had already been so stressful. I cried so hard in that doctor's office that day. But that same visit too, what was also really upsetting about that visit was before I even got to see the midwife, the nurse and I'd been seeing that nurse the whole time, she weighed me and I had lost 10 or 15 pounds in a week. Which is a lot.
And yeah, I would be concerned.
And so she was like, oh, you've lost some weight. And I was like, yeah, I just don't feel good. And she was like, well, I guess that's a good thing or whatever. I'm sure she was joking, but it was just, again, it's just kind of that diet culture thing where she was like, well, at least that's a good thing or whatever, whereas I'm 8 months pregnant, almost 9 months pregnant. I shouldn't be losing 10 pounds in a week. Even if I am plus size.
And you wonder what would have been said to a mom or parent existing in a smaller body. And a 10-pound loss that late into pregnancy. Yeah. And you saying, I'm not feeling good, would there be conversations around, are you getting enough nutrients and food for to fuel yourself and your baby? But then existing in a larger body, just being dismissed or almost celebrated in that loss. And weight loss during pregnancy can absolutely happen. And it's not always a red flag. It can happen gradually and slowly, but a big drop in a short amount of time. That's one of the reasons why we encourage people to be open-minded to being weighed. So they're looking for increases or drops, but to just be dismissed like that. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Kami. So I've never told and I've never made a big deal about it, and I do think it is a big deal, but part of it is honestly the fear, because I know there's still so much negativity towards fat people on the internet. So that's why I really haven't shared it, because I feel like there are plenty of people out there who would say that there was nothing wrong with that. And people who would probably shame me for being pregnant in, a larger body in the first place. And I'm not, I'm not here for that. And I don't need that energy in my life right now. So.
Right. But I appreciate you sharing it with us, because I think there are so many things that we just dismiss or feel like we're quote unquote brushing off that are said about us existing in larger bodies, but they stay with us internally, right? Like they still eat away, not everything, but there are those few things. Like this has stayed with you. Yeah. And I think when you feel ready to share it more, I think it'll be a good place.
We're not currently planning on having any more kids. We have talked about it.
Well, you better be careful, girl.
I know. I got an IUD after I had my
Okay.
And if this thing don't work, I'm going to sue. No, I'm kidding, we have every now and then talked about maybe taking it out and trying again, but I don't know. I mean, if I ever did, I would advocate more for is for them to use a manual blood pressure reading on me.
Okay.
Because once I switched to the OBs, they did, but in the midwife's office would use an automatic cuff. They don't work on my arm. I have a very large upper arm and they just don't, they read too high every time.
That's really good to bring up.
They don't give me a good reading. And so one thing that I would do more and that I would now advocate for is for them to do it manually, because the manual readings are so much better than an automatic cuff could ever do for me.
Yeah. And they're more accurate, and you can advocate for that larger cuff that is needed, because otherwise you can be diagnosed with high blood pressure when you don't have it.
Yeah. That would be another thing. I would come in there. And they would take my blood pressure and it would come out scary high. But I knew that wasn't accurate. So a lot of times the midwife was then coming in and doing a manual pressure and it would be fine. That's something that I would advocate more for, and that I would tell other women of size, is to make sure that they take your blood pressure with a manual cuff, because it gives a more accurate reading than those machines do.
Yes.
Especially if you have a larger upper arm area.
I love that. That's really important. Anything else around prenatal care that stood out or you'd want other people to know?
You know, I, like I said, I was very devastated to have to move to the OBs in that practice, but they were both great. There was a female and a male, and I was very scared that the male was going to be on call when I had to deliver because I really preferred women in my birthing space and not men. But the female provider actually ended up being on call. But one of the things that I really appreciate is that they did not pressure me to induce, even though I had gestational diabetes. As long as I was recording my numbers and I was getting, you know, my blood sugar was within the appropriate range, they didn't force me. And I went into labor naturally and had Maylee naturally. So I would also like to say that, too, that you can advocate for yourself very gently. I never had any ugly confrontations or anything. I just said I'd prefer not to schedule an induction until after my due date. My numbers are good. Everything's good. You know, my blood pressure's good. So I still ended up having a great birth experience, even though I had just said, I was so scared after I got that diagnosis that I was going to be pressured to induce or this or that, but it ended up being fine.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you shared that because we hear so often about that pressure to be induced even without a gestational diabetes, but just because we have a higher BMI. But like you were literally saying, there are no medical indications of why I should be induced and having a healthy pregnancy. Baby's good. I'm good. Like you're literally reiterating the fact that everything is going good. So why would we induce? Yeah.
Yeah.
It concerns for big baby with gestational diabetes is one of the main ones.
Yes.
But they can track.
And I will also say that she was my smallest baby.
Yes. So,
you know, that was the other thing that they were worried about. But she was smaller than my other two both weighed 8 pounds, 6 ounces, and Maylee weighed 7 pounds, 11 ounces. So,
and that was the baby that you had gestational diabetes with. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were your births like with your three babies?
I had natural birth is natural, period. I shouldn't say natural birth.
No, you're okay.
I did have hospital births with all three, but I didn't have any pain medicine at all. All three times. Mommy. So that third birth, my doula was out of state. She was actually, we live in Tennessee. She was actually in California on a contract. So, and at that point, we didn't really want to hire in anybody new or anything. I thought, this is my third time doing it. Let's just do it, me and you. And I said to Nathan, we'll just go in together and see how it goes. And it was fun. Fastest, easiest work, actually.
Oh, fastest, easiest. Well, it was also your third, too. So that might have played a little into it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What were some of those differences having a doula versus not having a doula in your experience?
I mean, again, this birth was also with OBs and not midwives.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much of this is due to it being an OB and not a midwife. I can't say, but I can definitely tell you that it was slightly different. I don't know how much of this was due to me not having a doula. I follow bundle birth nurses because that's on Instagram. Because again, I love birth stuff so much. Like in another life, I wish I could be like a doula or maybe even a midwife or something, but I don't know what's in the cards for my future now. But anyway, I've had some conversations with them and seen some of the things they share. So when I got to triage with my third, it was more like they were just kind of telling me what they were going to do and less consent. But I will say that I don't feel like I had a terrible birth experience. But I do think that there was less like consent based things. They didn't even ask me about it. I didn't have a birth plan at that time, but they didn't ask me about a birth plan, none of that. And they were kind, but it was different. And also, the hospital was so full that night that I had to have the baby in triage.
Oh my goodness. Wow. She came pretty fast too, then?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first thing they did when I got there was, once I got in and they got me in the bed and everything was they checked my dilation, which they did tell me they were going to do. They checked to see how dilated I was. But I swear, I think that nurse tried to do like a membrane sweep or something because it felt very uncomfortable. And I've had three kids, no epidural. I know what it feels like to get a cervical check. And she did something different while she was checking me. That's all I can tell you. And so they checked me and I was like 8 centimeters and we were like, cool. Ooh. Yeah. Every time. Yeah. Ivy was the same way. I got to the hospital 9 centimeters dilated. My water broke while they were walking me from triage to the delivery area. I labored like that for about 30 minutes. And then I came in and they were like, okay, well, the doctor's going to come in and break your water. Like they just told me. They didn't say, do you want your water broken? Do you consent to this? Here's the risks. They just said, she's going to break your water. And again, third baby, maybe they all knew how this was going to go, you know.
But still, I appreciate how you're explaining the difference when you worked with midwives. they were asking you how you felt about things or what you'd want to do or your different options. But when you had this experience under the obstetrical model of care, and that's not what it's like for everyone, but we often hear this narrative that I'm going to do this versus you providing your informed consent, which isn't just you saying yes, it's you actually fully understanding what you're saying yes to, and is actually a requirement before anyone does a medical procedure on your body. And it doesn't happen as often in birth, and it's not okay.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to put down anybody.
No, of course not. No.
But yeah, I mean, consent is still a place where, in terms of birth, where things could really be reworked, especially when you're working with the more medicalized, I think, just from my own experience of having birthed with midwives and birthed with OBs.
Yeah. But it was so wonderful, beautiful birth, right? Like,
yeah, it was so good. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was kind of teeter tottering on getting an epidural, even though I was 8 centimeters, I was like, maybe I'll get an epidural this time, because for me, I mean, everybody's different, but I can handle contractions, and you get a break in between, but they do get, of course, the more dilated that they get, the more painful it feels for me, you know, and when I get that urge to push, for me, like when I start asking for pain medicine, that means actually the baby's about to come out.
Yeah.
So I was like, should I get one or not? And then I was like, I don't think I want one. And then she broke my water and I was like, oh wow, I wish I got an epidural, you know, like.
It's more intense after that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't help it. I like hollered an inhuman holler that I've never hollered before and probably won't ever again. And so I was like, give me an epidural, you know, and it was too late. Like the doctor came running back in because she broke my water and then they raised me up. And like, that's when things got real, when shit got real, you know.
Yeah.
They all went outside and I screamed the scream and they all came running back in. And I was like, where's that anesthesiologist? And so then the doctor looked and she was like, oh, I think you're actually about to deliver. She just sat right down and out came Bailey.
Oh, wow. But it is your brain, like when, especially unmedicated, when you go through transition and switch to the pushing phase, it's a whole different bag of sensations and pain. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we like to use the word pain, sometimes we don't, to each their own, but it does feel different. Yes, and there is a different level of discomfort.
Absolutely.
And your brain needs to rethink about how do we ride through this together.
Yes, it's absolutely.
Yeah.
And a doula is great for that transitional period.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but we made it. It was fine. But like, oh my Lord. And then, and again, the nurse who I think stripped my membranes without asking or tried to do or whatever, she was still really sweet. And she came in there and held my hand and helped me push and helped Nathan stay centered. Not that I pushed like twice in the baby, you know, like I said, like, she came out like the doctor was even like, slow down a little bit. And I was like, you know, like it was too late.
Share but, from maybe a little from your first or your second with midwifery care and doula support, how that was a little different.
It was definitely a lot more person led. I think they were definitely more asking me like what I wanted or if this was okay or if that was okay. They gave me more options to move. Not that I needed a lot with her because it just happened so fast, but you know, like things like that. And I feel like the doula, when I came to that transition point, was more aware of like the things she could do to keep me from like feeling like I was losing control or whatever, to kind of help ride through that. Because transition is, like you said, I mean, you know, I don't know if you want to use pain, but for me at least, and to other people I've talked to that have had, you know, unmedicated births, you know when you're getting to that point, like your body tells you, you know, when about time for baby to come, you know.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason they call it a ring of fire. And it feels unlike anything you've experienced up until that point. And for so many hours, you've gotten used to something.
Yeah.
And then it changes so dramatically. Uh-huh. And it's all part of birth, right? But it's nothing with like... Cammie and I can tell you our stories in every single detail, and it still will never fully prepare you. But like Cammie has shared so many incredible gems of things to look out for, from the blood pressure cuff to informed consent and all these things that were like, it'll help prepare you for the experience better. But we can't fully express what you will go through.
Right. And even like with the water breaking thing, I feel like if my doula had been there, when they said, we're going to break your water, she might have said, well, why don't we get up and walk around a little first? And at that point, there was no reason for me to not be able to get up and walk the unit or something. Whereas like with just me and Nathan, it was more like, okay, you know, and in hindsight, I thought, you know, I mean, not, and it didn't matter. You know, she broke my water and within five, 10 minutes, baby was out. So, yeah. You know, again, but, you know, if you don't want your membranes ruptured at that point and there's no indication, you don't have to do that.
Yes.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook.
Talk a little bit about what it is like to go through a birth with a baby that is sick versus then having other experiences where it's like this, quote, more normal postpartum. And what was that like, especially as a first-time mom? I can't imagine.
Yeah. Boy, I got really thrown into motherhood. Like, yeah. I mean, I got taught some real serious lessons about being a mom. Like,
yeah.
You know, from the jump, you know, it was very different. You know, the NICU was quite a place. I am still thankful that it exists, but it's very different, especially when you go through like hypnobirthing and have a doula and you studied a certain type of birth and think, you know, your baby needs all the skin to skin and they need to breastfeed and they need to be with you and the NICU. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen like that. And, you know, you have to ask to hold your, a lot of times you have to ask to hold your baby and be, and they may tell you no. I got told no a lot. You know, the first time I went in to see him and they told me I couldn't, it's a longer story, but the first couple of times I saw him, I got to breastfeed him. And then he was so sick that afterwards they were like, you can't, and I was like, how is he going to eat?
Oh, mama.
You have to like learn the reality of like, there's babies that literally can't eat. You know, like you've been told your baby needs a warm tummy, you know, a warm feed and a nice full tummy. And, you know, you're like, wow, like this is not what I was thinking. At all, you know.
Did you guys know at all that Sagan had the heart condition in pregnancy?
No.
So it was after birth.
We had no idea until after he was born. Yeah, it was just a shock. And we, for the first 24 hours, we had him with us.
Yeah.
But they did the newborn screening and they came back and they, like the nurse came back and said, his murmur is a little loud. So we just want to do an echo before we send you home to make sure it's okay. And I just knew in my, I knew in my heart that something was wrong, you know, as a mom. I feel like, you know, just trust your gut too as a mother. And sure enough, they took him for that ultrasound or the echo. And then they came back and there was, the room was full of people and they were like, hey, no, this is serious.
Wow.
And so we had him at a small hospital in Knoxville. They transferred him to another hospital in Knoxville that had the level of NICU care that he needed. And then the next morning they came and took him to Vanderbilt, which is in Nashville, which is 3 hours from our house.
So
here I was like less, like not even 48 hours postpartum, taking a 3-hour car ride, trying to go see my baby. And it was just, I mean, oh my gosh, I had therapy earlier today and I was
talking. Good.
I
mean, I'm glad.
It's the kind of experience that just changes your life completely.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make that sound terrible because it doesn't have to always be terrible, but it just, it changes everything for you from there. You know,
what would you tell a new mom who's world has been thrown upside down looking back now? Like, is there anything like a word of wisdom that you'd want to share or just like, you'll get through it? Like, sure. What is that message?
I would say, feel what you're feeling. It's not weird. It's not wrong. There are a lot of people that aren't going to understand where you're at, but you're there and you will find the people who will know where you're at. And things will get better. And I don't mean better in like some toxic positivity way. You're going to learn how to live with this and you're going to get back on your feet and it's okay. The rug was pulled out from underneath you. It's okay that you fell down. It's fine. And stay there as long as you need to, but you'll get back up. You'll find your way. That's what I would say. That's what I would love to say to myself. You know, every mom who hears their kid has a devastating diagnosis, I can't tell you what your kid's life is going to be like. I'm thankful, you know, and looking at him now, I mean, you saw him earlier, you know, there's no way I would have, you know, I could have imagined this, you know, kind of life for us. And things have been different, and they were very different for a long time. I mean, he had a feeding tube in his stomach, but we lived life and we worked around it. And
now he's pestering you for snacks. Like, come on, mom, yeah, and feed me. And yeah, just like, yeah. Oh my gosh, what you said, like, warmed my heart so much. Just as a mom, sometimes, and we need to hear what you said there. I think I'll replay that for myself too. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, because I would tell myself the same thing about my little Ivy Jean.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every kid is different. And we, again, I mean, just like with our bodies, we're made to believe it's going to be this one way and it's supposed to be this way and that's the right way. But that's not true either. You know, yeah. Every kid is, your children are going to be different. You know, it probably has nothing to do with you. You're probably doing everything right, you know, because most of us, or most parents, love their children and are doing the best we can by them. And, you know, you learn to adjust. You hear some devastating news, or you learn that something's not going to be the way you thought it was. And you need to feel that. You need to feel that, whatever it is, disappointment, pain, shame, even. Yeah. Whatever it is, you need to feel that and sit with it, because it won't stay. You know, it's not a guest that lives with you forever. It's just a guest. And you sit with it and get to know it, and then you learn to live your life and you move on. You know, and you don't always move on completely. You know, like I said, it's almost like grief, and that you kind of grow around it.
Oh, Cammy, that's so powerful.
You know, you accept that you can still find so many good things in life despite what's in front of you, the challenge that's before you, if you want to say it like that.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you also said the guilt, because I think as parents, and I don't want to speak on behalf of you, I had some small issues with Brayden after he was born, but as a plus size person, there was all this expectations that my body would fail and I wasn't prepared for my baby to have some issues afterwards. And then I felt that guilt and responsibility, even though it had nothing to do with my size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did the same thing, the exact same thing. We were so prepared for our birth to go haywire, that my body wasn't going to do this, that after he came out and, you know, all this, we were like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, the worst of it's over. And that wasn't true. Yeah. I mean, he had some issues and it had nothing to do with me, you know? I mean, it's just this thing that happened, you know, things happen, you know? And even the fact that he has a heart defect, like, there are some people that would probably say, well, you were obese and it caused him to have this. I have met so many moms who were like fitness trainers, who were like super healthy, who still had a baby with a heart defect.
Yeah.
And a couple of them unexpectedly, even like we were.
Yeah. We can't blame ourselves.
Oh, no, you can't. I mean, yeah, that's part of the accepting this, where, like, you know, you can't blame yourself and you can't live in that headspace. It's not good.
I hear often from parents who have had a previous miscarriage or stillbirth that second pregnancy is, when they get pregnant again, it's so hard and there's so much anxiety. I can only imagine how much anxiety you must have had during postpartum. Once you had your daughter, what was that like?
I had so much anxiety. I had a little bit while I was pregnant, you know, just worried about things being okay. But especially because that first ultrasound that we did, the anatomy ultrasound, like, they didn't get good pictures of her heart. And I was like, oh, but we knew we were going to have an echo in depth and all that stuff too. So, and my midwives at the time, they were so supportive and called me, and, you know, it was great. But after Ivy was born, there was one day, it was one of the first days that I was home alone with both kids. And I will also say, as a mom of three littles, that a lot of people told me that going from one to two kid was going to be a lot harder than going from two to three. And I personally have to agree with that.
Yeah.
So, like, all that stress I had in my third pregnancy, I will just go ahead and tell you, like, once the baby was born, it was fine. And I look back and wish that I hadn't stressed so much, because it's been great. But after she was born, one of my first days at home alone with both of the kids, and I think, you know, it was a lot of work, because at that time, Sagan was still tube fed. So I was still having to do his tube feeds and stuff like that too, on top of caring for my newborn who was breastfed. Yeah. And she was one of those babies that didn't sleep well and needed to be held a lot. So she was just one of those babies, you know, so every baby's different. So there was one day where she choked on breast milk and I panicked and called 911.
Wow. Yeah.
And she actually ended up at the children's hospital that day. And it was just, it was a normal, like, she just got a little choked kind of thing. But I panicked because, I had seen Sagan turn blue. I had been told so much about watching his breathing and all this stuff as a newborn that, like, when I saw her choke, it just, obviously, I was in the throes of postpartum and not well.
But that's
so
okay.
I panicked and called 911.
I appreciate you sharing that. My goodness. Yeah. Like, but hey, you did the right thing, right? Like, yeah, you didn't necessarily need to call 911, but you were worried. You thought there was a concern and you did it. And I think so many of us parents can relate, as people say, like, overreaction, whatever. You thought there might have been a medical crisis and you acted. And you acted out of a place of love and concern. And we're all going to have those experiences on different levels. And they're all normal. But you're coming at this as someone who has been through a very traumatic experience with their firstborn and now wanting to do everything to make sure that your second is well and thriving. So thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure a lot of parents are like, oh, I've done something like that and I felt guilty or I felt like I overreacted, but we're all going to do stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my firstborn had open heart surgery and yes. I still panicked because my second baby choked.
Right.
For just a second.
So talk now about being a mom with three little ones running around. And especially as we talk about on the show, like being a plus size mom, do you think there's anything about being a plus size mom that comes into motherhood?
Let me tell you what a mindfuck it is to have a kid on a feeding tube and be a fat mom.
Oh,
you know?
Wow, yeah.
Going to the nutritionist and going to the GI doctor and, being, 6 foot tall and, a 350-ish pound body,
Yeah.
That's something else, let me tell you. And now I say that and I will say I've never been body shamed by any of our care providers, by any of his care providers, not one time, not even a little bit. So like, it just makes you very self-conscious. And I, at the time, was just learning about Hayes, help at every size and that sort of thing. And so, to be thinking about diet culture and try to rethink the way that I thought about obesity and diets and things like that, and have to very closely monitor my son's weight because he was tiny. He's very average now. He's caught up. He's very normal on the growth curve and all that. But to have a kid who looked so small and sickly for a while, I hate to say sickly, but he, he'd had open heart surgery and all the complications that come after that and, all that. We're trying to potty train IBG.
No, you're good. Everyone listening is just getting a feel of what it's like for having three children.
And now the other one's decided she's stuck. Oh, she's sitting down though. She's working on it. She's climbing down, but she's crying the whole time. I hate this, but I'm doing it, which is a feeling that I can relate to in a lot of ways.
Yes, me too.
So I probably said that at one point while I was giving birth, actually. But anyway, not that I don't hate, but
I feel ya.
In that transitional period, you say a lot of crazy things mm-hmm. that you don't really mean or whatever,
And you do for your entire life as a parent as well.
Yeah, it never changes.
No.
It just starts there. And,
But what you said was so powerful and profound about those weight checks. And I experienced that too. And being the plus size mom with a baby that was having some failure to thrive issues, it just felt, you're being extra judged and extra looked at. And then meanwhile, society was telling you, oh, but your baby was supposed to be so big. It was just so, it just is so many mixed messages and so much confusion and pain. And so I think it's really great to hear from other parents of yeah, this sucked, but you know what? My kid, and not all kids do end up thriving later, but we're lucky that ours did. Yeah. And then you still feel judged. It doesn't end.
So, that was something else I was going to talk about. Just as somebody in this body, I'm very active though. I'm not lifting weights or going to the gym or nothing, but I take walks almost every day and I'll get my ass up on the playground and play with my kids. Nice. I'll climb up to the top and go down the slide. There was one slide on one playground that we go to a lot that I didn't think I could fit on, but actually it was just narrow at the very beginning and it was fodder. So I just kind of climbed over the narrow spot and went down, I still am able to play with my kids, but there are people who will say things are you going to be able to keep up with your kids and, stuff like that. But knock on wood, I don't have any issues with that. And that's one of the ways that kind of gives me gratitude for my body where it's at, because I'm able to do everything I need to do as a mom in this body.
Yes.
And hear my kids. So, yeah. You know, and I'm a little worried about as the kids get older, are they going to get made fun of because their mom's fat or whatever? And there was last year when Sagan was in pre-K, there was a day where I went and had lunch with him. And some little girls in a higher grade walked by and they were like, oh, she's really big. You know, like, just that little, something that little, not mean at all. Just something little, you know, little kids love to tell people they're fat. They love to tell fat people they're fat. It just is what it is.
No filter.
And I didn't mind it so much. But then the teacher, there was like a teacher's aide walking with him and she was like, shh, don't say that, you know. And I almost kind of made it a little worse. And I looked at, I was like, yeah, are they like, look at how big she is. And she's in this big dress. And I had a real pretty dress on. And I was like, yeah, I'm a big person and I have to wear big clothes, you know, like just kind of played it off, you know, but it did kind of bother me a little, you know.
Yeah.
It probably triggered some things of like being made fun of when I was little and I was fat, you know, so maybe even some deep, deep stuff, but also like, I don't want my kid to like, you know, get made fun of for having like a fat parent, you know, and at times where I've thought about pursuing bariatric surgery and I'm not right now and I don't really want to do that. But when I thought about it, it's been because I don't want them to be made fun of. And like, I think about us going places like Disney World or Dollywood and not being able to fit on a ride. You know, I want to be able to ride rides with them. And there's a lot I can't fit on at this size. That is probably one limitation, you know?
Yeah. But those are all fears and concerns that I think we all have. And it's a shame that there are limitations in society because of our size. And while I can get an extra seat on an airplane, I can't fit on all roller coasters, right? So there will be limitations. But I think if, you know, people of different disabilities can't ride on certain rides or have accessibility to certain things. And they deal with so many adversities in life as well as people of size. There's no guarantees in life in anything. So living our best, healthy lives and being happy and finding happiness, like our kids' friends are going to make fun of us for one reason or another. Yeah. Like there's no preparing for that. But I really appreciate your vulnerability and honesty because I think so many of us can relate to those concerns and fears and desires to have experiences with our kids. Like I felt so thankful that most of the rides were fine at Disneyland, but I sure wasn't going to take my kid to Magic Mountain because I don't even know if, you know, one roller coaster would work for me. Right. So it's finding like, okay, well, then we'll just go to Disneyland, but that's not accessible to everyone either. So it's like, you just can't win, but you're just going to try your hardest. But as plus size moms, there are some things that absolutely suck and there's no way around it. And we just have to know it and talk about it. And know that we're not alone in it and that it's okay.
Yeah. For sure.
Oh, I adore you. And I this was so much fun and also like heart-wrenching and heart-beautiful to hear some of the things that you said as well. It was really neat to hear three different experiences and also the difference between your experiences with midwives and obstetrics and now motherhood. Do you have any final words of wisdom and love for your fellow plus size parents listening in?
Oh gosh, I can't really think of anything original. One of my favorite podcasts is the Viral Podcast, and they always end every episode with "You're doing great, you're looking good, and fuck what everybody else thinks."
Yes.
And so sometimes I just tell myself that to kind of hype myself up, you know. So I mean, I think that's just a great motto, and it's kind of what you just said, you know, like you've got to just do the best you can, and it is so hard to not think about what other people think, but sometimes you just can't, you know. And I think most of us as moms, like when the pressure's there for you to show up for your kid, you're showing up for your kid no matter what, you know. You'll do it,
right? Anything. We'll do anything to show up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's the bottom line is you show up no matter what, no matter what you think and feel. You know, that's kind of what I did at those nutrition appointments and weights and all that stuff. And so it didn't really matter. Yes. And I was thankful to be there, you know, and to be able to show up and have him there. And so I think that makes sense. But
yes. And I'm thankful for you and the Plus Mommy community. I feel like, you know, moms like us will show up for everyone listening every time too. So Cammie, tell people where they can find you and you can be a voice of strength and support moving forward.
Yeah. So I'm on TikTok. I have a public platform on TikTok, Big Mama Cammie. is my current handle on TikTok, and I don't foresee myself changing it anytime soon.
I love it.
At the beginning of this year, literally, I think January the 1st, I made my first public TikTok. It was very scary to put myself out there, but it's really not been as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I continue to do so. So you can find me there. I make a lot of random content. I don't really have a niche per se. And I did make a public Instagram account under that same handle. I don't really know what I'm doing with that yet. I honestly post like some selfie thirst trap kind of looking thing. Anything there yet. But if you want to follow me on a public platform, there is where you can find me. So yeah, I think those are my two public platforms. So,
well, you're awesome. And I so appreciate you. And thank you for all that you shared.
Absolutely. You're welcome. And thanks for having me. I'm so excited. It's been great. Yeah. Aww. I really appreciate you having the opportunity.
Thank you. All right, friends. Until next time, take care. Goodbye.
Bye.